Hello and hi, welcome back to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is Chris Vanderkay, who's co-author of a couple of reference books that fans of B-movies and sci-fi movies and horror movies will find very interesting. The newest one is Horror Films by Subgenre, A Reader's Guide. And it goes to a level of detail that not even someone like myself would have even considered. So welcome to the show, Chris.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Now, this is what I would consider one of the most complete and complex and just over attention to detail reference books I've seen in a long time. Horror Films by Subgenre, you've broken them down into 75 different subgenres of horror.
Yeah, we were aiming for 100, and then we realized we had to screen movies for every one of those genres. So we decided, let's calm ourselves down.
Could you really break it down into 100 different subgenres?
Well, ultimately what ended up happening is we did have more than 75, but what we felt like was we didn't want to do a subgenre if we didn't have one of two things: an interesting psychological or philosophical aspect on them, or three really interesting films that fit into that category that were worth talking about. And so those were sort of our two guiding principles. It had to have those two elements in order for us to feel like it deserved to be included in the book. So there were some, you know, like there are some super, super obscure subgenres that only have a couple, two, three titles in them at most, and some of them are not going to be ones that are necessarily worth talking about. So we decided it's got to be one that's really interesting, has three films, and has some sort of interesting element that says something about why we continue to make them and why we continue to watch them.
Yeah, that was the things that I found really intriguing about the way it was broken down. You actually include a section about the elements that make that subgenre stand out on its own as not just a regular, just horror. It's this particular subgenre. These are the elements that make up that subgenre. And then you give two or three examples of films that fall into that category. And what was your criteria for choosing those particular films? Was it quality, availability, just interesting filmmaking technique, or something else?
I think Kathleen Fernandez Vanderkay, my beautiful wife and my co-writer, she couldn't be here today, so I'm speaking for both of us. When we talked about how we wanted to break it up, we knew that we wanted this book to be sort of a half primer for someone who doesn't really know much about horror, but we didn't want it to just be for newbies. We also wanted there to be some movies that would be surprises. You know, if you've seen what you thought was every horror film in the world, or every, you know, dark sci-fi or dark fantasy film in the world, the hope was that with this book, if you have three titles, you'll have one that everybody knows, one that diehards know, and then hopefully sort of an outlier, you know, like one of those surprise ones that maybe it's either recent or it's really obscure or it just never occurred to you that it fit into this category. So our goal was kind of to just find exemplary samples of the subgenre, but also titles, one that makes total sense. You're like, oh, of course that would be in there. One that's like, oh, that's interesting, I remember that one. And then one that's like, whoa, I would never have occurred to me, or I've never heard of it. And then that gives you sort of a wide palette of things to go to. And then also at the end, we have the, you know, other recommendations from the subgenre. It's just sort of like other titles of interest in case, for whatever reason, in these 75, if there's like five that you're really drawn to, we don't want you to only end up having 15 movies to look at. So we give you like 9 or 10 other titles that might be similar that you could also check out.
Yeah, the table of contents is broken down by each, you know, one of each subgenre in alphabetical order. The ones that stood out to me as, huh, never thought of that as a subgenre, were campground horror and school horror.
Yeah, and the fun thing about it, too, is that the interesting thing about horror is sometimes films can exist in more than one subgenre at the same time, too. Mm-hmm. Like, because a lot of campground films are slasher films, but not all of them. And so it's interesting. You can have a slasher film that's also a campground film. You can have a slasher film that's also a holiday film. But they're not all. Like, they have some there's very nebulous borders in horror subgenres, meaning that they can sort of exist in more than one place at the same time. And so that was another thing we wanted to do, too, is when we pick a movie, make sure that it's the most exemplary sample of that subgenre. Like, if you have Friday the 13th, it could be a slasher film. It could be a campground film. It could be a Back from the Dead slash Revenant film. So you have a lot of choices, you know? So it's about which one is the most appropriate for that film.
Mm-hmm. The one that that really intrigued me was you separated zombie into modern zombie and voodoo zombie. How did that come about?
Well, there's been a long debate. In fact, Kathy and I tend to disagree sometimes on what can be considered a zombie. Because originally, when zombie lore was created, there was nothing about reanimated dead in the strictest sense about them. They were being controlled by a voodoo master. It involved witchcraft. And then George Romero came along, completely reinvented the field. There was no voodoo. There was no master. It was only mindless reanimated dead that were feeding on other people. So in a way, when you think about it, even though they're both called zombies, I don't think anybody would ever say a movie like Serpent in the Rainbow mm-hmm. and a movie like 28 Days Later necessarily belong in the same category. Because even though they're both called zombies, they're very different kinds of films with very different psychological aspects to the monster themselves. And so I thought, technically, we actually have three. We just didn't call the infection horror that's another one, like sort of. That's the argument between Kathy and I. Is 28 Days Later a zombie movie or an infection movie? You know, there's a big debate
mm-hmm.
with, you know, do they have to die and come back in order to be a zombie? If you're infected, does that make you a zombie? And I feel like, you know, and Kathy disagrees with me. She doesn't think they're zombies. But I say, if they evolved from voodoo to what they are now, why can't they evolve another step in the history of film, you know? So we split them up to show that there are, although there are many kinds of zombie movies, these are the two distinct, or I guess in this case, three distinct subcategories even of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because like a movie like Plague of the Zombies from Hammer is very different from Dawn of the Dead. And so it makes sense to have them in separate categories, you know?
Yeah. And when I was reading through the book, I was curious why, I'm trying to word this in a way that makes sense, you have infection horror, but not medical horror.
Well, we have science gone. Is it science gone wrong? Or there's a I'm trying to think. I think it's doc. There's something about a medical horror in there. I'm not sure if it's called medical horror, but it's where we have sort of the.
Well, it's
the scientist.
Yeah, it's like surgical medical horror.
Right. Yeah, surgical medical horror.
I would consider like bacterial infections, experiments that got away. There's certain, I guess, pathogen-related
mm-hmm.
tropes, for lack of a better word, that I'm not sure go directly into infection, but they don't fall under medical either. And I was just like, well, can you put them in both?
Right. Well, yeah, and that's an interesting thing, too. I mean, there are technically a couple of films in this book that some people wouldn't even necessarily consider full horror. But the thing is once you get into subgenres, oftentimes, and I think people recognize this, that there are sometimes overlap between horror and fantasy and horror and science fiction as
mm-hmm.
well. So you can,
yes.
like, obviously, Alien is a film that fits perfectly into both genres. So in the same way, I feel like movies can certainly overlap into multiple subgenres. So yeah, when I say infection horror, I guess you're right. It's sort of more like an outbreak type horror, you know, the idea of a virulent disease. But then you'll have a movie like Contagion that isn't really about someone becoming overtaken by a disease. It's actually just sort of someone dying from something infectious or something like Carriers. So yeah, the interesting thing is, you know, when you only have three or at most four titles to differentiate a genre or a subgenre, you know, McFarlane was very kind in fitting all that we had to fit into the book, but I'm sure that there is a volume two waiting to happen at some point. Horror and science fiction are the most prolific genres every single year. So there are more and more subgenres being born. You know, every 4 or 5 years, there's a new subgenre to be labeled. So I'm sure we'll probably come back around to this again as a volume two.
Now, would you increase the number of titles in the genres you already have, like something that's you overlooked or something that was new, and then just add to it the other subgenres you didn't include?
Yeah, I think maybe if we were going to come back to it, probably what we'd do is just an addendum. So if you purchase the first book, the second book would just be an addendum for ones that weren't covered, so you didn't feel like you were rebuying all the genres you've already discussed. You know, we'll just talk about the ones either that hadn't been covered or hopefully hadn't been invented yet, and we're still sort of discovering what they are.
Now, were there any notable films that you weren't able to categorize in this volume?
That's actually interesting. That was the one thing we talked about, is that there's a term for it when you're writing. They call it, whatever genre, they call it gonzo, whatever, gonzo horror, gonzo sci-fi. There are certain films that are just kind of hard to figure out exactly where they land. And there was one that I really wasn't sure where I was going to put, and then I eventually just put it in horror comedy because it is kind of funny, and it's the movie Rubber, which is basically about a tire that has the ability to make people explode with its mind. And it's so insane and so bizarre. It's like a David Lynch film filtered through something on Adult Swim, you know? And so it's hard to really define what it is. Ultimately, like I said, I didn't want to leave it out, so I put it there. But yeah, there are certainly movies that tend to defy strict categorization. And someday there may be even a book, if not just maybe an article, about that itself. You know, what that says about those movies, that they are able to not only defy categorization, but that they were still popular enough that they found an audience.
What was your most interesting or surprising discovery when you were looking at all these films?
I think the thing I found most interesting, and this applies both to Kathy and I in different ways, was that as we started to go through all these subgenres, we realized about ourselves that there are ones that we are immediately drawn to, and then ones that we really don't frequent at all. Like, we both love zombie films, but I could literally name off the top of my head maybe two or three cannibal films I've ever seen in my life. I just don't generally gravitate towards them. And what we realized as we were putting this book together is that a big aspect of subgenres is about people being drawn to a specific subject matter. And if that's the case, if they're seeking those kinds of movies out, they're seeking something about that kind of movie. So there's some psychological aspect to that, whether it's something they're afraid of, something they're interested in, something that they're trying to understand or discover about themselves draws them to that genre. And so that was a really interesting discovery for us on this journey.
Cool. Now, where do you stand on categorizing? Would you put a monster-themed horror movie into one of these subgenres? Because there isn't actually a monster horror subgenre here.
That's interesting. That was actually one of the categories that we had. We had a monster horror or creature horror, and what we realized is that it would be kind of unfair to just create a monster category, because sometimes even movies with monsters defy sort of the expectation of what that genre is. I mean, there are monsters in Pacific Rim, but I think people would probably argue that that's far more science fiction than it is really horror.
Yeah.
And so that it becomes this sort of tricky back and forth about, you know, well, so does Godzilla count as this? Does it count as that? One of the things that we didn't cover was the idea really of children's horror was another one, because that's one little piece of what they're doing in the movie rather than the defining element of it, you know? In the same way that you would say, like, an action movie can be a lot of different things. It just has to have action in it. So when you have a monster, there could be a lot of different kinds of things you would do with a monster. And so really what we kind of thought was, there could be an entire book just specifically about the subgenres of monster movies. And since that it's almost a creature in and of itself, we're going to hold off on making one sort of dismissive single category that only names three movies in a genre that has, you know, been alive and kicking for a very long time.
How hard was it to find the movies that you screened? Because you cover the decades in this book.
Yeah, well, one of the most fun things about it is for us was actually coming up with the categories, because most people don't just sit down on the couch and like grab a notepad and go, okay, I'm going to write down every subgenre that I can think of. And we started doing that, you know, you usually get to about 15 to 18, and then you start to think, oh, okay, there's going to be an easier way to do this. Let's just look through the list of the movies that we've watched and see if we can see defining subgenres within those. And so that's kind of what we did. So it did help that we just watched an enormous amount of movies, So we had already screened a lot of them previously. Now, we obviously had to watch more, but like if we had seen, you know, I was watching Night of the Living Dead, actually, and it seems obvious that should be a zombie movie, but I was like, oh, this is one of the great basement films of all time, you know, like one of the great films where the basement is so key and central to the entire telling of the story. It's a battle to get to the basement. It's a battle between the people who want to go there and the people who don't. It's the place where the biggest climax in the story happens, where you see the first person who was a human turn into a zombie. So, like, it really is a basement story. And I was like, oh, that's actually a thing. I just realized. And I started going through my head of all these other basement stories. And so they'll sneak up on you like that, where you're just going through stuff you've already seen, and then a light bulb pops, you know?
And I love some of the people as monsters categories. You have crazy family horror, creepy kid horror, old people horror, humans hunting humans horror, redneck horror, always a favorite.
It's the funniest thing about it too is that, like, you could just say, like, human horror, you know, but then the interesting thing about it is that a movie like Deliverance is a completely different movie from Texas Chainsaw Massacre in many ways, you know? And so it gives you the opportunity to say, yes, they're all about people hurting other people, but beyond that, what else is it saying? What's the bigger question mark? What's the bigger social commentary here? And that was the really fun part, because when it's just human beings in a story, then you usually are dealing with some sort of social issue or some psychological aspect of actual humanity. So that's really fun to explore that stuff.
Yeah, I wasn't sure where clowns would go, if they would go into doll, puppet, ventriloquist, or if there should be a separate subgenre for clowns, because I don't like clowns. I don't know if I was traumatized at the circus as a kid or something, but ever since I saw the creepy clown in Poltergeist, it's just gone up. And every time a horror movie comes up that features a clown, I go, no, not going there.
Yeah. No, and that's another thing. We did a category that was sort of circus carnival horror but, you know, not all clowns hang around the circus. That's kind of the problem. It's when they follow you home that it gets scary. But yeah, no, that's another thing. It's interesting is that, you know, I don't think you could ever write this book because it would be so complicated. It would look like the ramblings of a serial killer on the wall of a closet. But there are even subgenres to subgenres. Like, the clown film is probably a subgenre of both, like you said, the spooky ventriloquist dummy story, but also the circus story. But then, you know, it could also be an alien movie if it's killer clowns from outer space. You know, there's so many different ways you can go with it. And one of the reasons we wanted to do the book is because, as interesting as it is to divide them all up, the fun thing is to realize that it's actually just it's a spectrum. I think we talk about it in the beginning, the idea of using a prism to break a single beam of light into all the different colors that are contained inside of it. But we need the light to see, but the prism is what breaks it up to show us the details that we missed. So that's really the point of the book.
So have you gotten a lot of feedback from horror fans on this yet?
We have. Actually, one of the exciting things is that Kathy and I are on Twitter. It's at CK Vanderkay. And we reached out when the book came out. We actually just, you know, sent a quick tweet to a lot of the people whose films appeared in the book. And we got amazingly positive feedback from people. I wish it had occurred to me to talk to them before we did the book, but I assume, you know, they're busy people and they may not have time to sit down and talk about it. But a lot of the filmmakers whose work was featured in here were so excited to not only have their work featured, but to also see, like, okay, which category did my movie make it in? What other stuff is in that category with mine? And I've even had certain filmmakers who are working on spec scripts and things like that get the book specifically because they're like, oh, I was going to be working on this kind of movie. So this book is a great resource for them to say, okay, here's kind of the psychology of the story. Here's a few beats that most of these stories play. Here's a few examples. It really kind of helps you as a storyteller to understand what things either you want to include or what things you can change to surprise an audience.
Just going through the movies that I had that attracted my attention in my earlier formative years, because I'm trying to remember if the first horror movie I saw was Jaws or It's Alive or It Lives Again. And I saw those in the theater as a very young child. Probably shouldn't have been seeing Jaws at age 10, but I did.
Yeah.
And just looking through all these movies, I'm like, yeah, I remember that movie. I remember that movie. I never saw that one, but I remember it. And just going through and just reading your analysis of some of the movies was, I guess, for me, for someone who likes good reference material, seeing this kind of level of detail makes me appreciate how much you appreciate the films and what went into making the ones that are good stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, a big thing for Kathy and I has been that up until about the 70s, scholars have done a great job of talking about the film movements in all of film, but also in horror film. One of the things that happened as a result of the 80s and the 90s and the I guess the aughts, you call them, is that as films became more popular, the coverage became standard film criticism, thumbs up, thumbs down sort of stuff. There hasn't been the kind of care and attention to modern movies that there has been about, you know, when you look back at Universal's horror films from the 30s, there's an amazing amount of scholarly coverage and discussion of those. Mm-hmm. But as you get into films like, you get into the slasher franchises and you get into like what they call the meta horror, like Scream and Cabin in the Woods and these sorts of things, the coverage is out there like on the internet and stuff, but there isn't a lot of what I would consider really solid scholarly coverage of newer genres too. So our goal was to try and synthesize those two things, still talk about the old stuff, but to bring up this new stuff that has sort of gotten caught in what I call like the entertainment field swamp, where when a new movie comes out, all the people are interested in asking them about is like, what was it like working with this person? What's the scoop on your next movie? They're not really interested in talking about the kind of stuff that you and I are talking about, or like you said, you remember about great classic stories from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I think the past 2 years or so that I started finding newer horror movies that I could enjoy again, because it seemed like in the early aughts, the 2000s, everything was a slasher movie or a splatter movie, and I got bored with it, and it just was not interesting to me. And then a few indie movies came along that caught my attention. I was like, hey, wow, this is actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. This is the classic old horror movie that I grew up enjoying. Like, one that completely surprised me was, came out last year, I think, called Dark Was the Night.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it's a throwback to the old monster movie. I'm like, this is really good. Why aren't people talking about this?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's another thing that's happened, too, is there's so much material nowadays that, yeah, in a way, Kathy and I kind of look at ourselves as curators of the genre at this point. You could literally right now turn on Netflix, look in the horror section, and find thousands of films. The mm-hmm. problem is there's such a glut of them that you would have no idea where to start for what might be good. And so our goal with books like this is to say that, yes, there are 2,000 movies you could watch on Netflix right now. However, here's 65 that might be a great place to start. These 65 are all, you won't be disappointed. You won't feel like you wasted your time, at least. Now, I don't know your personal taste, but I know this is a quality film that's about this and this, you know? And hopefully that helps to build what Kathy calls sort of like a blueprint for a good horror fan, which is like, don't waste your time on the kind of stuff you're talking about, you know, like bad slasher ripoffs, or how many of a number of found footage clone films that are out there about paranormal investigators or five kids going on a vacation in a van that are never found again, you know? Mm. There are so many of those that the great films get lost. Like Dark Was the Night, I agree with you, was an outstanding film. And because there are so many films, it kind of just got lost in the shuffle a little bit. Thankfully, people are loyal and they go out and they look for them. But mainstream audiences wouldn't even know about that film, you know?
Yeah. Now, your previous book was called The Anatomy of Fear, Conversations with Cult Horror and Science Fiction Film Creators. When did that actually come out?
That was the end of 2014. We're running on about a 2-year cycle per book. So, but yeah, it was obviously much longer in the writing of it, but it was released in 2014.
Okay. Now, and that one, how did that one come about? Because, you know, this is what I enjoy doing, talking to the writers, the storytellers, the filmmakers, the people who are actually giving us the fun movies, the fun stories. Because even if a movie is bad and it's still fun, I put it in there. Okay, yeah, we'll keep checking this out. Mm-hmm. So how did the first book come about?
Well, actually, I owe it to great podcasts like Slice of Sci-Fi and the Horror Etc. podcast, because I used to work landscaping many, many moons ago, and I needed 10 hours worth of entertainment a day to keep me moving. And so I would listen to a lot of these really great shows, and they would have occasional interviews. And in your case, I'm a listener of Slice of Sci-Fi from way back. I think the first episode I ever heard was one where some crazy guy came on and was trying to sell plots on the moon where you could... like you could purchase, like you could sell off Oxygen 3 or something. I mean, it was a, like, I don't think anybody on the show had expected that was going to happen with that
we
guy.
Didn't.
But he was like, yeah. But so like, yeah, so from way back, I was a fan of those shows, and Kathy and I decided we wanted to do one. And we ended up doing a show called The Anatomy of Fear, where we would do one film a week, and then we would talk to the filmmaker about it. And we ended up enjoying it so much that we were like, this is great, but this is almost the material we're getting from them. We're only talking to them for 15 minutes, but there's a wealth that we could be talking to them about. And so we started contacting some of the people we'd already talked to and said, would you be interested in being interviewed for a book? And so it ended up working out. We talked to about 25 filmmakers, and we had just a wealth of material, had to figure out how to sort of divide it up. And we ended up sort of dividing it by theme. We did a section on early films. We did a section we called Nightmares on the Set, which is just about horrible experiences while trying to make movies. We had sections about vampires and the supernatural, one about found footage. And so we just divided it like that, and then each section, like if we talked to Jack Shoulder, who directed A Nightmare on Elm Street 2 and also The Hidden, one of his would be in this discussion about franchises and one would be in the section about sci-fi horror. And so once we had it all figured out and divided up, then we sent it out, and we were able to work with Norlights Publishing to put it out, and it's been a great experience. The filmmakers have been super great with their time and with following up to make sure that you know, people are seeing it and spreading the word themselves. It's been great.
Yeah, The Hidden, that's a cult classic if ever there was one.
Yeah. And, you know, the funny thing you said a few minutes ago about the idea that, like, a movie doesn't have to be great to be worth going back and watching. And one of the things that we talked about with filmmakers is that even films that you might think are just, okay, like, The Hidden is just this gem of the 80s, you know, B-movies. But an interesting thing, if you go back and watch The Hidden now, it's a really interesting sort of accidental observation on the me generation, you know, the 80s, how it was all about greed, you know, about, I mean, the whole movie is about an alien who just takes whatever he wants by taking over a body and stealing a car. And like, he just does whatever he wants with no ramifications. And in a way, it was kind of a commentary on what was happening at the time, and, you know, on Wall Street, with rich people just grabbing whatever they could and not worrying about anybody else's well-being. And so it's interesting you see these little themes start to peek out around the corners of what seem like these simple little movies.
Hadn't thought about it that, like, that way. Since when you're watching a movie when it comes out, you might actually be a little too close to the situation because you're living in it. 10 years later, you look back and go, wow, that was a lot more insightful than I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even to movies you don't think are about comments. I mean, Kathy and I were looking at the Saw series for a new book we're looking at, and we realized the first film came out in 2004, and that franchise is about people being tortured for their own supposed betterment. And that's the time when America was finding out about Abu Ghraib and about Guantanamo Bay and about what we consider torture and whether it's worth doing in order to save people's lives. And it's interesting, at the time, everybody just thought, oh, these are gory, disgusting movies about humans hurting humans. And it's only now when we look back, we're like, no, that was us having a public conversation because we didn't know where is the line of morality for what we're doing. And this is the conversation we're having about it. And yeah, you stumble onto things like that and you go, man, it's amazing that we didn't pick up on it before now, but it's because we were participating in it, so we didn't recognize it.
Wow. So what is your next book that you're working on?
We are working on a book right now. It's called Fear Resurrected, and it's basically about the idea of tracking the changes in society through the evolution of film franchises. We're doing 12 horror film franchises, and we're tracking basically, like, let's say you take Friday the 13th. Started in 1980, the last movie, the remake came out in 2009. So what we're doing is tracking from 1980 to 2009 what happened in the franchise, what things were iconic things that returned over and over and therefore are sort of what we would consider the immortal truths of the franchise, and then what things changed, and as a result of that, what does it tell us about the times that they were coming out? You know, like differences in fashion and society and culture, but also what are the changes in the psychology of the characters? You know, there was a massive evolution for Jason Voorhees in Friday the 13th from a victimized boy who was probably deformed, to a crazy redneck backwoods killer, to I think he became, like, he came back from the dead at some point, so he was a pseudo zombie. Then he got souped up in Jason X and became like part cyborg. You know, so he has this really interesting evolution.
Yeah.
And sort of that's what we're tracking in this book, is to watch the evolution of a franchise in sort of real time.
Hmm. I would like to see a comparison between the old standalone horrors and the drive to create a horror franchise. It seems like some of the studios are trying to put together a package and count on being able to make another chapter in that franchise package every other year, just to keep people coming back, just to build a franchise name. I'm like, no, just give us a good movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you hear it now, all the actors, they always say, when you sign onto a movie, you sign onto a 3-picture deal no matter what, because they just want to make sure if it's popular enough, they don't have to pay you more next time.
Wow, talk about cynicism.
Yeah.
Well, we will have links to horror films by subgenre and The Anatomy of Fear. I'm guessing people can get those at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever they find their favorite books. Is it print and ebook?
Yes, yeah, you can get both of them. McFarlane does have a dedicated page for horror films by subgenre, but you can also get that at Amazon. But yeah, they're both available, e and text versions.
Excellent. We will have links to those. Thank you so much for creating, I guess, the type of books that appeal to geeks like us.
Well, I can only say, I mean, obviously Kathy and I appreciate coming on, but we also would say exactly the reverse, that we appreciate the fact that you have kept the torch alive. Slice of Sci-Fi, I told you, like I said, since back in probably 2007, 2008, I started listening, and I've been a fan for years. So to have been able to create something because of the love I witnessed from other people, to now be able to share that with the people who inspired it in me, is an enormous honor. So we really appreciate what you guys do, too.
Well, thank you, Chris. And again, Horror Films by Subgenre and The Anatomy of Fear, authors Chris Vanderkay, Kathleen Fernandez Vanderkay. We will have links to those so you can satisfy your horror and B-movie just hunger out there. And we'll keep an eye out for the new book.
Absolutely. The Fear Resurrected.
Fear Resurrected. And we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Welcome to Tales of the Black Badge, a Wynonna Earp fan podcast. WynonnaEarpPodcast.com. Thanks again for checking in, and I hope you all take care. I told that devil
to take you back. Tales of the Black Badge, presented by Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV.
I love talking with people who have an academic as well as an entertainment interest in old school horror, or just horror in general, because it seems like a lot of the people who are making the new horror films these days are just churning out paint-by-numbers formula films just to make a quick buck. They aren't looking for that extra little something that would make a story really, really resonate and carry on and become a cult classic, or even just a straight out classic. Yeah, I know. My expectation bar is set way too high for today's Hollywood. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, come on, tell me. Remind me. Yeah, I know. But I have high standards because I love stories so much. I love the getting lost in the moment with a set of characters that I'm either afraid of or that I believe in or I may despise but still root for. I may enjoy a movie because of the setting, for the imaginative use of a time travel twist, or or some sort of other scientific paradox. I enjoy seeing people come up with new ways to twist things that are outside the box. Problem is that there's so much entertainment out there, we may miss a gem or two. And maybe the rest of us should work a little harder on doing something about that. I don't know. But yeah, check out Chris and Kathleen's books. The references themselves are well worth the read. I mean, I found a couple of older movies in there that I hadn't even known about. And now I wonder if there's a similar book on science fiction or fantasy. Because that would definitely, definitely be a book I'd use as a reference in Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas. But yeah, we'll do some more with horror later. But for now, that'll do it for this show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to call in. The number is 602-635-6976. Leave a voicemail message or record one yourself and email it to me, summer@sliceofscifi.com. If you have any other just questions you want to ask, send me an email there too. Go over to iTunes if you listen to the show through iTunes. Leave us a review, leave us a rating. You can also catch us on Stitcher and TuneIn. We're doing the social media thing. We're on Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi. We're on Google Plus, Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And don't forget to check out our videos on YouTube. We're at youtube.com/SliceOfSciFi over there. And of course, we have the websites where you can leave your comments on the movie reviews or some of the other interesting things we find now and then, sliceofscifi.com. We also have kickassmysticninjas.com, as always, and writersafterdark.com if you prefer your science fiction and horror literary flavored. Thank you, everyone who's donating to help support the show. I literally could not keep this online if it wasn't for your help. Every penny, every dime helps. And if you want to help support this show, you can. Just go over to patreon.com/sliceofscifi, and your pledges every month will help support not only the web hosting for all these websites, but also the media hosting. So thank you, everyone, again. I am still working on bonuses for the patrons, for the different levels of patrons. And as soon as I have that figure out, the patrons will be the first to know. So thank you all for your support. As always, I send out my heartfelt thanks to Cy Fried, my favorite geek rock band, for the music that graces the show these days. They did an awesome job. And if you like your geek and nerdy music rock flavored, just go over to their website, cy-friedband.com, and check out the other albums and songs that they have. They have a few free items that you can check out as samples. I recommend the parody of Dr. Jones for all you old school Kiss fans out there. As soon as you hear the song, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening, for tuning in, and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.